Once you've evaluated your four pillars and you have a sense of what is most important to you, going and speaking to somebody who works in the type of job that you're curious about, or in the industry that you want to move into, or at the organization that is your dream company, and asking them to give you the dirt and the real deal on how well does this organization honor this value? How much does this role actually use skills like this?
Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Cesar Romero.
Hello, and welcome to the Ivy Podcast. I'm your host, Cesar Romero, and today we're going to talk about building a successful and fulfilling career with Lisa Lewis Miller, founder of Career Clarity. In this episode, we're going to talk about making career moves that lead you towards more happiness and fulfillment. What are some of the things that you could do right now if your work has been impacted by the pandemic? The power of cultivating relationships for career success. Some of the misconceptions about building a successful career, and how to evaluate career opportunities that align with your values. And of course, much, much more. Our guest today is Lisa Lewis Miller. Lisa is a career change expert and the founder of Career Clarity, a company helping individuals step into the careers they've been dreaming of. Her path evolved into coaching after working in digital marketing for nearly a decade. Her work has been featured in the Washington Post, Business Insider, US News, Fast Company, Forbes, and many more. She received her coaching certification as one of only 7 coaches in the world trained in the Pivot Method. If you are looking for someone who will believe in your potential as strongly as you do and equip you with the ideas and resources to make it happen, then you definitely want to listen to this episode with Lisa. Thanks so much for tuning in. And let's dive right in. Lisa, welcome to the Ivy Podcast. I'm so excited to have you on the show and talk about career clarity and how we can help people that are listening leverage those tools to be more clear on what they want out of their careers. So thank you so much for being here today.
I'm delighted to be here with you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So I figured to start, I want to dive a little bit into your background journey, right? And I guess the first question I want to ask is how you ended up becoming a career coach.
It's a great question. And it feels like such a funny story to tell because when I look back on my professional history, I sometimes will describe it as I looked a little bit like a manic version of Goldilocks. So I started my career working in nonprofits, and I was working as a new media associate because this was back in the day when digital media and social media were still so in their infancy that they were in this new media category. And I started out at this nonprofit and was there for a little while, ran their website redesign project, and had this experience when I was there that was really catalyzing for me. I had been working on this website redesign project and putting together my recommendations for how we could modernize this nonprofit's online presence. And I put together this huge, beautiful PDF with all these examples and all the research and the data and the statistics around optimizing for user experience. And I took this presentation in to the director of development. For any of you who are listening who haven't worked in nonprofits, that's their chief fundraising person. And I presented it to her and I was walking her through all the thoughtfulness around how this was going to create a better experience for donors. It was going to set up recurring online donations. It was totally going to bring us into the 21st century. And she was looking through and sort of giving me some feedback. And so I was explaining as she was giving her suggestions as to why, you know, some of her ideas might not be in alignment with the best practices. Mm-hmm. And I will never forget this moment. She stops thumbing through the PDF. Mm-hmm. She looks down. She sort of exhales. And then she says to me, "Lisa, I don't really care about your recommendations. Mm-hmm. If I tell you to put Mickey Mouse on the front page of our website, that's your job to do it."
Wow.
And I remember in that moment having something shift inside of me. Mm-hmm. That I was working at an organization I thought I felt really good about. Mm-hmm. I was working in a role I thought was a pretty decent fit. But in that moment, I realized this is not going to be a personality fit for me to stay here in a way that's sustainable or psychologically healthy. Mm-hmm. If I'm essentially being told that my intellectual labor doesn't matter to this organization.
Right.
So when I think about my sort of manic Goldilocks experience, this was the bowl of porridge that was too cold. So I knew things weren't going to be sustainable there. So I swung the pendulum to completely the other side and went into communications consulting, mere steps away from the White House, working on policy issues, working with lobbyists, working with grassroots advocacy, and in a very high growth, high contribution kind of a space. And I was doing really well, shooting up the corporate ladder, getting promoted every single year, on track to be a VP before I was 30 and to be making six figures before I was 30, which, you know, for me at that time seemed like a really fabulous thing.
Yeah.
But again, I was finding myself in a situation where everything looked kind of great on paper, but it didn't feel the way I wanted it to feel. There was a culture of disrespect between the consultants directed towards their clients, which just felt icky to me. And so after a few years there, that didn't feel good and felt unsustainable. So that bowl of porridge was too hot. And I decided it was time to leave again. And I thought, where do I find this right combination of respectfulness and mission, but also growth? And I thought, let me go work at a startup. I found an ed tech startup. I was working there for a couple years, and I realized this is not it either. Mm-hmm. And at this point in my career journey, I'm thinking to myself, what's wrong with me? Mm-hmm. Why can't I just be happy? Why can't I just figure it out? Mm-hmm. Why do I not fit? And why do things not work every single place that I've landed so far? And so see, that was really the moment when I threw myself into trying to understand, what are the factors that go into a fulfilling, healthy, life-giving career path? How do you identify what they are for you? How do you screen for them in organizations and employers before you show up? And how can you start making career moves that lead you towards more happiness and health and fulfillment rather than just going from one desk to another desk to another desk, you know, same crap, different day. So that is how I got into career development as an area to nerd out and to really develop some expertise. And I then wanted to share that information and wanted people to learn from all the lessons that I had learned over those years of my career. And so I put out a shingle as a career coach back in 2015 and eventually scaled up the business to be full-time and have been doing that ever since.
Wow, what a great journey you've had doing experiments. And a couple of things that you mentioned that I want to unpack there. And I know this is something that you mentioned in your book, Career Clarity, is the false summit, right? And when people land that job that looks good on paper, but then they realize, oh, shoot, this is not what I was expecting. How can we, I guess, not prevent a false summit, but how can we, once we know it's a false summit, how can we have that courage, you know, of what you did, of like, okay, this is not for me, I'm gonna look for something else. You know, what are some of the recommendations that you would have, especially during this time that it's a lot of uncertainty, you know, with COVID and the pandemic, where like people are being told, you should be grateful that you have a job, you know, and paying the bills. Like what would you recommend to people that have realized this is a false summit, but I don't know if I should make that move?
It's such a good question. And you're absolutely right to highlight that there are a lot of factors right now in the job market and the job search that make it feel particularly unstable and particularly scary.
Yeah.
We hear numbers every single week about unemployment or job growth not meeting expectations, or this new company went through a round of layoffs. And it can feel very easy to feel like it's hopeless and that you just need to really white knuckle your way through whatever you're currently doing. So I feel like there are a couple different things that I want to speak to all within your question. I think thing number one is how to cultivate and maintain hopefulness and optimism in a time on its face looks troubling.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I found, because as a career coach in a time when the economy is, as my nephew would say, cuckoo bananas, you don't want to be a snake oil salesman, right? You want to be peddling truth to people.
Yeah.
And so when this all began, my first thought was, let me go look at the data. Let me look at trends. Let me look at the history of what's happened in the past so that I understand what I can say to people from a place of intellectual honesty and authenticity. And I unearthed this great article from Harvard Business Review back in, I want to say 2018. So before the advent of any of this pandemic stuff. And it was an article summarizing a longitudinal study that had been done on the recessions that had happened in the economy in the 80s, 90s, the 9/11 recession of 2001, and then the 2008 financial crisis. And what they found looking at all of those in aggregate is that, and I think I'm going to get the numbers here right, but fact check me. they said that in each of those recessions, approximately 17% of publicly traded companies did not do well. They were not prepared. They didn't have continuity planning, contingency planning. They were exposed to a lot of risk. And so when the economy took a turn, they were not able to meet that and they suffered. And a lot of things went poorly. And so the first thing to hear in that is that it was only 17%, which on the one hand is a big percent, and on the other hand is actually not that big of a percentage. But the other thing that the HBR study saw, which I thought was fascinating, is that at the same time that 17% of the economy really got, you know, hit in the head by a 2x4, there was about 9% of the economy in each of these recessions that outperformed, that wasn't just stable, but actually tended to grow and take advantage of opportunities and rise to meet the challenges of the time. So the first thing that I want to encourage anybody who's feeling a little nervous right now to look for is find the 9%, because the 17% is going to dominate the news stories, right? Yeah. We know that because it, you know, the sensationalist scary stuff sells. So look for the 9%, right? No matter how you feel about Amazon as a company, they have added or are committed to adding 100,000 jobs over these 12 months. And Amazon's not alone in that. So while there are absolutely companies and really even whole sectors of the economy that have been hit hard and that it's going to take a while to be able to fully recover, there are also parts of the economy where they're still hiring and they're growing at all levels, blue collar, white collar, whatever kind of employment you're looking for. So piece number one is find the hope. Notice the trends, seek out the 9% so that you can see that there is this second narrative of what's going on right now, so that you can feel like there might be some hopefulness out there for you and some possibility for you to make a transition.
I think that's I don't mean to cut you off, but I just want to echo that, because it's so important, right, to have your mindset in the right place, right? Because if you think that everything is wrong, nothing's working, and the whole world is going to self-destruct, and there's little that you can do, right? So I think that's so important to look for that 9% and look for the positive and hold on to that as much as you can.
Absolutely. That's definitely piece one. Mm-hmm. I think that piece number two to know is that one of the really unique things about this particular circumstance is that everybody across the board is feeling more isolated and more lonely than they are used to being.
Yeah.
And when we look at the data that comes from the Bureau of Labor Statistics every single year on how people successfully land new jobs, the BLS says that 70% or more of all the jobs that are acquired come through relationships, connections, and networking.
Yeah.
So interestingly, in this time where we are all feeling more siloed and more separate from our community, mm-hmm. there's a really big need and a craving for connection.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're finding yourself in a situation where you don't love what you're doing and you're thinking about making a move, but you're feeling nervous about it, reaching out and setting up phone calls or video calls or even socially distanced walks with people who you know who might be able to help you, whether it's help you brainstorm, help make introductions, pass your resume along internally at their organization. Those kinds of social interactions right now are so precious and cherished and valuable that you might actually get more traction than you would have gotten under ordinary circumstances, because people are so craving this kind of connection and intimacy with one another. Now, I'll say that anecdotally, what I've been seeing with my clients right now is that more people are responding to requests for coffees, virtual coffees, and phone calls and informational conversations right now than we've seen in recent history, because folks are really wanting to feel that sense of connection and contribution.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I mean, relationships are everything, right? It's how I've gotten the opportunities that are meaningful and fulfilling to me have all come through relationships, which is crazy to think about that. But now on the let's say on the, I guess, practical level, right? Because I want to make sure that we help the audience here. Let's say I'm someone that wants to cultivate a new relationship, right? But I don't know how to do it strategically, right? What are some of the recommendations that you would have in terms of how do you reach out to someone that you don't know, but that you want to cultivate a relationship with?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'll give you some tips, and then I'll also suggest a couple resources that anybody who wants to dive deeper can go mm-hmm. into. So step one of cultivating brand new relationships is figuring out how you can make it as easy as possible.
Mm.
So where I like to start is with my current existing set of relationships and noticing, who do the people that I know? Who are the people that I know connected to where they might be able to create an introduction for me, mm-hmm. where they can vouch for my character so that people understand I'm not just some random stranger on the internet?
Right. There's so a lot of those.
Well, and I think that it feels like we are very overwhelmed in a lot of ways digitally. And so any kind of marker to help us prioritize and sort digital mm-hmm. interactions is helpful.
Yeah.
So coming with a recommendation or a warm introduction is a great way to separate yourself from some of the other requests that somebody might be getting that day. Mm-hmm. So starting with, who is a connection of mine who might be able to open their Rolodex, right, their relationship network to me and make some introductions, is an excellent starting point. the next place that I would think about in terms of making this easy on yourself is going through an intellectual exercise to say, okay, well, who do I want to get introduced to? And if nobody in my network is able to introduce me to people who work in that kind of a job function or have that subject matter expertise or have worked in that sector or who have a connection to that company, the next question you ask yourself is, where do I think I could find those kinds of people? Because the answer may be that there are online communities. Maybe there are online trade associations or membership organizations, you know, the Association for Change Management Professionals or the Association for Quality Assurance Engineers. There could be tons of different organizations like that that you could join to be with like-minded individuals and starting to get more of those relationships and learn more of that industry knowledge. It could be looking at things like, are there any one-off niche communities, like a specific Facebook group for, I don't know, product managers in Austin?
Right.
Or people who all live in the same neighborhood. You know, any ways that you can start to put yourself in the communities where those folks are likely to be is a great next step to, again, make it easy on yourself. And so you might do some research into who are some of the people that I'd like to meet and just doing a little bit of online sleuthing to see where they might hang out. Maybe this person has expressed that they participate in their university's alumni network. And so finding a university alumni event that you could just show up at or that you might know somebody who's connected to could be helpful. Maybe the person who you want to connect with plays pickleball, and you can look for a local pickleball league and some way to just start to create more overlapping circles. But that's step two. And then step three, of course, is if neither one of those pathways yield really fruitful options, the cold outreach message is always a possibility. And there are ways to write it in such a way that it will feel compelling and fresh and exciting and worthwhile to respond to. And I did a whole podcast episode with the awesome guys over at the Career Warrior podcast about this. And I'm happy to send over a link for that we can put in the show notes so that folks who want to go really deep into the nuances of an outreach message can look at. And I also just recently did a podcast episode on the Career Clarity Show about how to be networking in this digital time. And so I am happy to share that too, if people want some additional inspiration on places to look for those networks and communities and for ways to initiate and build relationships when face-to-face is hard.
Yeah, no, definitely add those to the show notes. And just to echo what you said, I think it's important to look into your immediate network, right? As what you mentioned, and then seeing the commonalities, right? How can you ultimately build trust, right? Because it's all about having that trust. And with the cold email, I have my fair share of cold emails as well. And I think the biggest thing for me has been to lead with generosity, right? And kindness. But yeah, we'll definitely add that to the show notes. Just to shift gears here a little bit. What are some of the common misconceptions out there that people have about building your career, right? And then we can tie those into the four pillars, right, of career clarity.
Sure. Well, one of the biggest misconceptions that I hear from folks is this desire to sort of figure it out and find the one right thing for you and to find the thing that you're going to be doing for the next 10, 20, 30 years of your career.
Right.
Because the world that we live in really is requiring us to be nimble and pivot and be willing to take on new challenges. And so the idea that there's one singular thing that you're going to be happy doing for the remainder of your career is probably not a helpful mental model for most employees anymore, most of our economy. Are there places where people absolutely stay in the same lane for the entirety of their career? For sure. Are they always happy to do so? I don't know. I've had my fair share of lawyers and doctors and dentists and veterinarians come and seek me out saying, listen, I've invested so much time and energy and money into this path, and it doesn't feel good anymore. And I am terrified to try to figure out what else I can do. So I think that rather than trying to put pressure on yourself to figure out the one right, perfect thing for you for the rest of your days, it is much more gentle and much more expansive to just focus on what's the next ideal step for me right now, given what's going on in my life. Right. And Caesar, I'll use you as an example here that you have a darling 3-year-old daughter.
Yes.
And back in your day before you were a parent, you probably had different priorities in your life.
Yep.
And when this little angel came and blessed you and your family, your life changed.
100%.
And your priorities changed and your needs changed. And it's really good to allow your career to shift as your life shifts, so that if you need to take a step back, or you need to earn more money, or you need to have better or different health benefits because of what's going on in your world, you give yourself the spaciousness and the permission to be nimble and agile and to pivot. So that's one misconception that I think really comes up in the way that we think about career pathing.
That's a big one.
I think too, it's really tied to some more antiquated ways of thinking about career and work, because there are generations prior to ours that really held on to this dream that once you finish up education, whether that's high school or university, you get a corporate job, you go work for a big company, and then you work at that same organization for 40 years until you have your retirement party where you get access to your pension. And that's so not how our world operates any longer. As if we all had access to pensions in whatever path we chose. So I think that the release of the previous incentives and the previous stability and security that prior generations had expected, and stepping into the reality that our economy is ever changing and evolving, and like the COVID pandemic has shown us, whole industries and sectors can get turned upside down in the blink of an eye. Being willing to be actively managing your career and actively building optionality into your path is now one of the safest things that you can do, rather than looking like a professional liability to an employer. So that feels really important. And to your point about the four pillars of career fulfillment, when I think about how to actually navigate the discernment process around, if not this, then what? Where do I go from here? What else is out there? The four principles that I really encourage folks to think about, and I'll say too, for your listeners, to think about this both at a micro level for yourself personally, because it is always good to think about these things and do a little refresh and a gut check. But for anybody who's listening who is in a position of leadership or management, think about these same four concepts, four pillars, as they may relate to the members of your team, to your direct reports and your employees, even folks who are interning at your organization, because this framework may help you to see how you can better resource them to help make their work experience more fulfilling and more sustainable. It's nice to have a model that can work at both the micro and the macro level for folks. But thinking about it at a micro level for yourself, the four pillars of career fulfillment are the four factors that seem to consistently drive fulfillment and sustainability in a work situation. And these four qualities are things that you want to be satisfied in. So you're not necessarily looking for a 10 out of 10, 100% hitting it out of the ballpark in every one, but satisfaction and peace across these four dimensions. So dimension number one to evaluate and consider as you're thinking about new opportunities is, looking at how well the role or the opportunity matches up with your strengths and gifts. And what that requires is for you to know what your strengths and gifts are, and to know the difference between just all the stuff that you can do and your capabilities and the things that energize you and that you feel naturally, intrinsically motivated by. So that's piece number one. Are you finding yourself in a role where you get to do things that energize you and that feel naturally motivating, exciting, and that get you into the flow? Mm-hmm. Pillar number two is looking at your magnetic interests and how well you're able to solve problems within your role and within your team, within your organization that you care about. So it's a question of not necessarily, is this my one burning passion? And is this the one thing that is my purpose in the world? But more of a question of, do I feel compelled and interested and have a desire to help solve whatever the challenges are that my role and organization and sector are trying to address? Pillar number three is the question of personality fit. It's the question of, do you feel psychologically safe and like you can make contributions in a way that are going to be appreciated and respected within your workplace? And this one can run the gamut from being questions about your physical environment. Do you feel like you're in a physical space that sets you up to thrive? All the way to culture and values of your organization and your boss to make sure that they're in alignment and that nothing that is highly important to you is being violated. Mm-hmm. And then the last pillar of career fulfillment is, of course, the lifestyle pillar. Understanding how you want work to fit into your life, understanding the compensation range that you would like to be in, understanding the benefits that you need and the flexibility that you need. And evaluating each of these four pillars to understand your unique needs and your priorities among those needs can be so instrumental in mapping out what could be next for you. Whether it's a little pivot of just adjusting projects or a team within your current role, or whether it's a flip the table on life, big picture pivot of going back to graduate school, changing your job function or your industry completely, making a move across the country or across the globe. These four pillars can be really prescriptive for you on where to start looking to find the highest likelihood of a really good fit for your next move.
I love the four pillars. And as someone that has been coached with this framework, I found it very helpful in digging deeper into truly, you know, at the core, who it is that I am, right? And the person I want to be, the type of career. Even it forced me to think about, before I would think about fitting life into work, but now it's that shift happened where, no, my work needs to fit into my desired lifestyle, right? And I feel like we're not taught that in school or anywhere. We're taught that, hey, this is your work and you have to somehow figure it out, right? Or work around it, right? So it definitely takes a lot of experimentation, right? Because at least for me personally, knowing my strengths and my personality, it's taking a lot of internal work, but also asking the people around me, like, what is that they notice about me, right? What is that you think I'm good at? Which goes back to the power of leveraging your network and building those relationships, right? Because ultimately, they can give you good feedback on the four pillars, right? And one question I wanted to ask you, you know, let's say someone has gone through their four pillars, they have the first version, let's call it the first draft, right? And they have an idea. How do you evaluate the opportunities, right? Because if I'm a, let's say I'm a job seeker, right? And I go to a job board and I read the job description, it's hard to gauge if this opportunity is going to be a good fit or not. So how do you, what would you recommend as far as, you know, once you work on the four pillars, how do you evaluate those opportunities?
Yeah, it's a wonderful question because it's nuanced and it's a little complicated. And the way that we're taught to approach job searching really is to go and find a job description online and mm-hmm. read through what they've said on paper yep. and then do a sort of mental calculation of, well, does this sound enough like what I could do that I should right. submit myself and apply for this? And there are a number of things that are a little troubling about that model when it comes to seeking out workplace fulfillment and satisfaction. Mm-hmm. One of them being, and I'm sure anybody listening who has ever done a job search can attest to this, that when a job posting is made public, sometimes there's not a whole lot of thought that goes into the job description. Yeah. Sometimes they are copying and pasting a boilerplate generic job description and just putting it online. And it doesn't always match up with what the job really is.
Right.
So job descriptions on their face can actually be a really poor source of information for us about whether or not something's going to feel like a good fit. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to evaluating prospective opportunities and understanding how well they might match up with what you want and need, job descriptions are usually one of the last places that I encourage folks to go. Mm-hmm. I think that it's really, really important, you know, to your point earlier about the power and the beauty and the value of relationships, to ask people who have better insider knowledge and get their take on what the opportunity is, what the need is, how you match up with an opportunity in front of you. So once you've evaluated your four pillars and you have a sense of what is most important to you, going and speaking to somebody who works in the type of job that you're curious about, or in the industry that you want to move into, mm-hmm. or at the organization that is your dream company, and asking them to give you the dirt and the real deal on how well does this organization honor this value? How much does this role actually use skills like this can be invaluable in helping you to make the discernment about, is this actually worth my time, or does this look good on paper but doesn't feel good in the doing and in the reality? And one of the interesting consequences of having these kinds of conversations with insiders, especially if they are not necessarily in a position to hire you in that exact moment, is number one, you're going to get the real deal. Right? If you talk to a recruiter or an HR screener, they inherently are going to put a little bit of a rosy glow and a rosy spin on things because they want to woo you. They right. want to fill the role. They want to hire somebody. So it can be easy to gloss over some of the realities of the situation. But the other thing that is so powerful about having these conversations with folks who are not necessarily interviewing you is that they can come to know you as an individual and know you and like you and start to build a bit of a professional friendship and a rapport, which will mean that these individuals are more likely to stick their necks out for you and to help you and to think about themselves as being partners with you on your journey. And that is critically valuable because that is the difference between somebody having a recruiter reach out to them and saying, sorry, I'm not interested, versus having a recruiter reach out to them and saying, I'm not interested, but you should talk to so-and-so. And same goes with if they hear about an opportunity coming up on a team and being able to say, hey, it was so great getting to chat with you about your career aspirations and how you might fit into an organization a couple weeks ago. I know in our conversation, we kind of determined that marketing wasn't a great fit for you, but there's an opening that's coming up on our sales team. And I'm curious if you'd want to talk to somebody on the sales team. And it's those connections and those introductions that are how jobs get filled, and especially how career changers are able to vet opportunities and cultivate advocates and champions along the way.
I love that. Yeah. And now on to flip it a little bit, so if, you know, if I'm in the management, if I'm the VP of an organization, How can I leverage the power of the four pillars to make sure that my team is fulfilled, growing, Or maybe, you know, if it's time for them to shift towards a new position, or maybe even, I guess, leave the company, right? Like, what advice would you have for someone in that position of leadership?
Well, the first premise that you have to start with as a leader within an organization is that I understand my employees are not going to be here forever. I understand my employees are not going to be happy doing the exact same job for 10, 20, 30 years. And if you can accept the reality of those premises, then it opens up some really interesting opportunities for you to be an advocate, a sponsor, and a champion for individuals and for your company. Because just because somebody's not going to be happy doing the exact same job for 30 years doesn't mean that they want to leave your company. It doesn't mean that they even want to leave your department. It just means that you as a manager will need to be responsive to and constantly looking for and asking about their sense of satisfaction and fulfillment and growth so that you can be in a constant dialogue about ways to keep them happy and fulfilled and satisfied within the organization. You know, so many of the people who come to work with me will say, I feel like I'm here because I'm ready for my next challenge. I'm ready to grow, but I wish I didn't have to leave. And so if more managers were attuned to thinking about ways to create opportunities and growth within their organization, even if it means somebody spins off of your team and grows into a different capability, that can be better for the organization and its bottom line, because you don't have to replace talent. You don't lose the legacy knowledge. And it really endears you to that employee when you were helping to champion them, finding a way to get their needs met internally. So for a leader or manager, one of the questions is, if you look at an employee who may not be thriving and you do an audit of what you think their four pillars might be, do you have any intuitive senses of where things might be particularly off for them? So do a gut check first of knowing these four arenas. Do I feel like I can sense from all the data points that I know about this person that they are feeling fulfilled and satisfied in each of these four pillars? And if not, where is my intuition telling me things might be funky or off? The second thing that you can do as a manager or a leader is to educate your employees about the four pillars and ask them to do a self-assessment and an audit. You know, what's missing for you here? Where would you like to be that you're not? What would help you to feel even more satisfaction across each of these dimensions? And when you can open up that conversation and show them that you care more about them as a person than about making sure that that one capability is met by that person, it really changes the conversational dynamic. It increases their sense of psychological safety and trust of you. And it also gives you a bigger heads up that you may need to backfill a role, right? If you don't create an open relationship with your employees, they are pretty happy to just give you 2 weeks' notice and head on out. And you may not even know that they were interviewing. But if you know that they are not happy in their current role and that they're looking to make a move somewhere else, you get to do so much more planning and have so much more control over creating business continuity and getting somebody in who can be trained before your employee leaves, or being able to cross-train them to keep them within the organization in a new role. So be not afraid to spend a little bit of time in contemplation about your employees to see if you have any intuitive hits about where things might be out of alignment for them. And then be not afraid to educate them and share with them this model and this way of thinking so they can tell you what might feel really good, what would be life-giving, because your hopes or your assessment of their situation might be very different from their self-assessment, and opening up the door for them to feel like they can share more candidly about what's going on is so valuable.
I love that. And I love that you mentioned having that open communication, right, between manager and the staff, and empowering the staff to either leverage the four pillars or use whatever tool they feel comfortable to find that clarity, right? Because one of the things I've also learned the hard way is that once you're inside the company, right, it's your job to take charge of your career and your role and where you want to grow, right? It's not, I used to think that it was, HR will take care of me, right? HR will tell me where to grow, right? And I have realized throughout my experience that that's not the case. It's actually the other way around, where you need to do the internal work, right? Have clarity, and then you take charge of, hey, these are the things that I want to do to continue growing. And unfortunately, the minority of people do that, right? So this is why I'm so passionate about doing that internal work and finding that clarity, because ultimately, and I always quote Tony Robbins, where he mentions that we can be successful, right, at the wrong thing. And that's probably one of the worst feelings in the world, when you realize that you put all this time and effort into something that really wasn't making you happy, right?
I love that. My favorite Tony Robbins quote, you know, whether you love him or hate him, my favorite quote is, success without fulfillment is the ultimate failure.
Mm-hmm. That one. Yes. That's the one that I was looking for.
So if you can set yourself up with a mental model to understand what fulfillment is for you, it becomes so much easier, just like you're saying, to actively manage your career and make sure that success and fulfillment are moving in the same direction, rather than pulling in two different directions and pulling you apart.
Mm-hmm. Yes, 100%. Awesome, Lisa. And great, so many great golden nuggets of wisdom here. But just to wrap it up, one last question here before we wrap it up. I always like to ask my guests, books, courses, things that you're learning. It could be anything, right? It could be books that you've given the most, or a book that you're currently reading that it's adding a lot of value, or a course or anything out there that you might want to share with the audience. And I see you looking at in your bookshelf there.
Yeah, I'm looking behind me at my bookshelf to evaluate, because I feel like it so changes with the season.
Yeah, it does.
You know, the one book that I think has been really informative to my own journey and that really helped me get into coaching and gave me some of the mental models that then I've extended and grown in the Career Clarity philosophy is the book Pivot by Jenny Blake.
That's a great book.
And if there's anybody who's listening to this, who's thinking, I don't want to get career clarity, that doesn't sound like it's up my alley, pick up Pivot. Because it's such a wonderful way to explore how to use what's working to map out what's next, whether you're thinking about entrepreneurship, whether you are thinking about something non-career related in your life. It's a lovely model and one that's been so instrumental and helpful to me in my own journey.
I love Pivot and the Jenny Blake's work. I follow her when the first book came out, or the blog, I can't remember exactly the name of it, but she was her audience was college students, right? And she was helping them out with pivots and stuff. And pivot these days, it's a trendy word, right? We're all looking to pivot some way, somehow. So I think that's a great recommendation. So thank you for sharing. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Awesome, Lisa. Well, this has been a great episode, full of insights into the career search, getting career clarity. And once again, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be here with us, and looking forward to future episodes where we can get to catch up and continue to deliver value.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I hope that this was helpful for anybody listening, and I hope it was encouraging. You're not alone. You can do this. There's something else out there for you. Be not afraid to go after it.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And of course, if you don't want to miss on new upcoming episodes, make sure to subscribe to the podcast through your favorite podcast app. Thank you so much again, and until next time.